Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well and coping whatever is going on for you at the moment. It's been such hideous weather, hasn't it, for a lot of this week in the UK, that it's been just felt so hard just to get motivated. I don't know if that's just me. I have had a bunch of clients who do seem to feel the same way. They feel that at the moment, motivation is hard and we have to really kind of force ourselves out the door if the weather is bad. To that end, actually, we had the most amazing session in the Sober Club with a shaman, Yakov Darling Khan, who I'll be bringing you an interview with Yakov. But he did a session for us exclusively in the Sober Club, which was all about movement medicine. And it sounds like a fancy term, but, you know, he explained what it is. And ultimately, it's about dropping into your body and moving. And that can mean, you know, putting on some music or whatever, and even music that you used to love, he suggests. And it really struck me that, this is what I need to do far more regularly. So many of us are caught in our heads. We're locked into this negative thinking so much of the time. Yeah, it can be really destructive. And, you know, of course, we go all around the houses with what's going on and beating ourselves up. I've got lots of clients at the moment, or several clients at the moment, who are really quite locked into negative thinking about themselves. And they just can't seem to find a way out. You know, it's all the, I'm always like this, I'm this kind of person, I'm all or nothing, I have to have, you know, however many drinks, I can't do, you know, it's all very negative, the language around it. And of course, there's lots of things we can do to reframe that, lots of things we can do to help people think differently about their thought processes and about their choices. And that we know about all these different challenges we can give ourselves, noticing what's going on, noticing what we're thinking, and, you know, the think, feel, act cycle. So we can notice, what are the thoughts? What is the feeling I'm trying to create when I'm reaching for a drink or thinking about reaching for the sugar or the booze or whatever? And then ultimately, what's the action I'm going to take? So we know there are loads and loads and loads of thought processes, lots of little tricks we can do to reframe and to change our language. And I love all of that. And having, you know, become a NLP practitioner, I'm queen of it at the moment. I live and breathe trying to reframe our thoughts and the language that we use. However, sometimes I really believe that you just have to get out of your head. And I don't mean in a destructive way. You have to just drop into the body and just let the body take it. Because so much of the time we're in fight, fear or flight mode. You know, we're ready to leg it from that tiger. But there is no tiger. And so sometimes we just have to tell the body that everything is okay. And the session that Yakov did with us was just fantastic for just reminding us that we sometimes just need to move. And often it's more often than we think it is. And don't be confused, by the way, into thinking that means you have to be a fabulous dancer. Sometimes you just need to shake it out. So I've found that really helpful this week. It's another great form of release, and, you know, gets you away from the thoughts in your head, gets you away from your phone, social media or whatever scrolling you're doing, doom scrolling they call it now, don't they? And of course, getting you away from mainstream media for a bit. So can't be a bad thing. So that's my top tip. I've delivered that within the first few minutes. Let me tell you about today's show. We've got a lot going on today. I'm so thrilled that we teamed up with Slangovar. Now, this is a unique new drink. I love finding out about new alcohol-free drinks that, you know, really hit the spot. And this one is unique in that it's, you're going to hear all about it. I thought it would be great to actually interview Sarah, who's the creator, because it's such an interesting story. So So we're going to be talking to Sarah. And then also, I know that, you know, we're past New Year and everything. However, setting goals and deciding what we want for our lives and reframing our limiting beliefs can be just so important for so many people. So I thought it'd be great to speak to someone who's a real expert in this, but comes at it from an approach which uses again, NLP techniques and transformational hypnotherapy. And Rosalind Palmer really knows her stuff and has been working in this arena for ages. So I thought it'd be really interesting to interview Rosalind. Again, Rosalind did an amazing hypnosis session for us within the Sober Club. So so I really know how powerful this stuff can be. Ultimately, we've all just got to take responsibility, right? You know, for lots of people will say, but it's not my fault. This happened to me or that happened to me. And that's why I'm in this situation. And you know what? You're right. It probably isn't your fault, but it is your responsibility now. Once you've recognized what's going on, I do believe that we can take responsibility for moving forward, for what it is we want, you know, in the future. So hopefully this will be relevant to you, whatever stage you're at, you know, as is all the stuff we do in the Sober Club, really. If you're at day one, that's great. Come on in. Absolutely no judgment. If you've been sober for years and years and years, there are going to be so many other amazing things you can uncover. I was having this great conversation with a client the other day, and she was sort of intimating that she thought maybe when she got to the end of the 6-month period that she'd kind of set for herself, she set herself the challenge of doing 6 months sober, which is awesome, by the way. And then she sort of suggested that when she got to that point, she knew that she would probably feel like, you know, she'd got it sorted then, and she would probably go back to drinking because things would plateau and it would no longer feel new and fresh and exciting. And, well, I had to put a right on that one. It gets better all of the time. Every single year it gets better. Who could have imagined year on year on year? Well, did you see that fabulous post by Marion Keyes, the author Marion Keyes, celebrating her 27 years sober? Just amazing, isn't it? I just love the fact that it's still a thing. It's still such a thing that someone like Marion Keyes would plaster that across social media. You know, what an amazing thing to have happened to somebody, for it to still be such an important part of your life, because it underpins literally everything. So yeah, you've heard me say that a lot of times. So anyways, we're going to be speaking with Slangivar, or rather with Sarah from the brand Slangivar, and then also with Rosalind Palmer on how to reframe, how to change your limiting beliefs, how to set the goals that you really want for yourselves. And that's not the same as resolutions. It's a very different thing, setting the intentions that you want. I just want to remind you that we have a free Zoom session, a free masterclass next week. Obviously, most of the stuff I do is for Sober Club members. You're very welcome to check that out. But I just thought it would be great, as lots of people are coming to the end of dry January. Maybe some of you want to carry on with staying off the booze, or maybe you have other behavior change that you're thinking of making. So I thought I'd do a free session. Everyone is welcome. Well, within reason, obviously, places are limited. But you do have to register if you want to join us. It's Thursday, the 28th of Jan, 7:30 p.m. UK time. And I think I've just called it Want to Be Happy, Healthy, Sober in 2021. That's the title of the ebook, Happy, Healthy, Sober. And I thought I would just run through a few basics, really, a few real key things that I think underpin making these behavior changes that we feel are important for us. Obviously, there'll be time for Q&A as well. So if you know anyone who you know is not ready to necessarily dip in just yet, but they want to just find out a little bit more, if they're sober curious, that's cool. It's totally non-judgmental. It doesn't matter what stage you're at, because we're going to be looking at at least to a certain extent, at behavior change generally. But if you have been doing dry January, you might find it especially useful. So you just need to go to thesoberclub.com and click on events. So soberclub.com, click on events, or it'll be in the show notes as well. It's a free masterclass, this Thursday, 28th at 7:30 p.m. Just a reminder, the ebook is out, Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. Thank you so much to those of you who've given me some feedback and, you know, who've given me some lovely reviews. I'm so grateful. It's so weird when you put a book out there, you just honestly don't know if it's any good or not. Absolutely no way of knowing. So it's really great when people tell you that they're enjoying it. So please, if you have read it, please, please write me a review. I'd really appreciate that on Amazon. And the main book comes out February 11th, of course. So without further ado, let's hear this interview with Sarah. You know how much I love finding out about amazing new alcohol-free drinks. And I'm so pleased that my guest is Sarah Dugan. And the brand is Slangevar. Now, I wonder if I've said that correctly. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about this this brand then. First of all, tell us about the name, because it's a very unusual name. It's a Gaelic word, I understand.
It's Gaelic, yes. It means, it's a Gaelic toast for cheers to your health.
Oh, I love that. Right.
And
did I say it right? Say it
you
for
didn't
me.
Need Slangevar. Yes, Slangevar. You did.
Okay. So you know, so literally it translates as cheers, good health, those kind of phrases.
Yes, and I've used it in an ambiguous way. It's cheers to your health of your fellow drinker, your drinking companion, but it's also cheers to the health of the environment, because we are heavily involved in seed planting projects. So every time you take a sip, you're actually helping us plant trees.
Oh, amazing. Tell us a bit about how it came about then and exactly what the drink is.
I get married late in life, in my 50s. And my husband is a foodie. He's one of those people who can go into a kitchen where you think there's nothing in the cupboards and he can come up with this master chef, super duper yummy meal.
Oh, wow. I wish you could send him round.
Yeah.
I could do with some of that.
But we get into the habit of wine o'clock. 6 o'clock would arrive every evening and we would open up a bottle of wine and then it might be two bottles of wine. And it was, I developed an unhealthy habit, just drinking wine every evening. We decided that we would try other non-alcoholic drinks, but we were frustrated by the number of sweet, sugary drinks that were on the market. Mm. They clashed with food. They were calorific. So that's why we came up with our own recipe, tinkered around with various combinations. And the final recipe we came up with is lime, honey, ginger, a wee bit of cider vinegar and water.
Right, interesting.
That's the story. Mm. We took it to various restaurants. We would order meals and then we'd say at the end of the meal to the chef, try this. And out of that, I'd have my handbag with a bottle of Slangevar in my handbag. And I bullied various chefs to try it out and to get feedback.
Mm. And what was the response then? Did they like it?
It was really good. We got excellent feedback. I got a grant from the Scottish Government to test the recipe, to finalise the recipe. I also went to various trade shows and we asked people just for their feedback. Mm. And they loved it.
Brilliant. So, you know, I mean, we've long known about sort of cider vinegar as being healthy, and we hear of people saying, okay, well, I'll have a teaspoon in the morning or whatever. And we also know that it can be really good for helping to reduce cravings, but I'm interested how you sort of came up with the idea of making that into, you know, mixing it, making it into a longer drink, because if we think of sort of apple cider, you know, cider vinegar of any kind, we just do tend to think of a teaspoon, but you've kind of based your drink around it effectively.
I wanted a drink that had a bit of a kick.
Yeah.
You know that ceremony of opening up a lovely bottle of wine and you sip it slowly and you savour the label? Mm. I wanted a drink that would last long. Mm. Too many soft drinks are sweet and sugary and you gulp them back. With the cider vinegar and the ginger, there's a bit of a kick so that you would sip it slowly.
And what does give it enough sweetness then? The lime and the lemon?
No, it's that we've got a small amount of honey.
Oh, okay, yes, of course, yeah.
And we've got Scottish heather honey that gives it just a smooth aftertaste so that it's not too astringent or acidic. So the honey gives it balances the flavour.
And I guess the honey probably helps to preserve as well with the vinegar.
It does.
Amazing. And you've got beautiful bottles. So you put some effort into the packaging of this, because as you say, you know, it's not just a case of opening up anything and shout. It's this ritual, isn't it, really?
It is, yes. I think when you look at a pub, you look at some of the gin and the vodka bottles, and they're absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
You want to try them just to savour the beauty of the bottle. And I wanted to do something similar with a non-alcoholic drink.
Great. Tell us a bit more then about what the sort of sustainability piece of the brand, because I know that's really important to you. And I love hearing these stories where, you know, it's not just, okay, I've popped a product out. There's all these other layers beneath it.
I started to read up about pollinator decline, especially honeybee colony collapse. And it was something that should be worrying us all, the number of insects and pollinators that are becoming extinct. And we also, for every bottle of Slangovar, we plant a tree, and we're also involved in seed planting projects for wildflower meadows throughout the UK.
Amazing. So when you say a tree, so a tree is planted for every bottle sold, where would that tree be planted?
The subtropics.
Okay.
Because they sequester carbon far more effectively than trees in colder climates.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the charity that I'm supporting is called Tree Sisters.
Mm.
They've planted, I think, 15 million trees this year.
Yeah, they're an amazing charity. I love the work they do. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. So it really is, as you say, you know, you sip this drink, it's good for your health, but you're ticking that little bit of sustainability box at the same time.
That's right.
Great. So moving forward then, what do you hope for the brand, you know, when everything opens up? Are you hoping that this will be in bars and restaurants? And would you ever sell through supermarkets or anything like that, or just into the drinks market, as it were?
At the moment, we don't want to mass produce because we've got to maintain the health of bees.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? That sort of keeping it small and artisan.
That's right. So at the moment, we're not selling. Maybe if we wanted a couple of flagship supermarket shares, but we could never be, I don't think we could ever be a mass market product, because we have got to look after the bees.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes.
Right. Well, it's lovely to chat with you, Sarah, and it's such a unique flavour and a unique drink. And at the moment, it's just that one flavour, as it were. Would you ever look to any other anything else in the range?
No, we've tweaked the recipe recently so that it's, we used to have a pasteurised version. We're now introduced a fresh version that isn't pasteurised, and that's a much tastier flavour.
Great.
So in terms of the actual ingredients or the flavours, we're sticking to the one flavour.
Great. Well, I wish you all the best with it. It's really unique. It's great, great work that you're doing. Love the branding. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Do you want to just give us the website just for anyone to find you?
www.slangovar.com.
Great. And I'll pop that in the show notes as well, so we get the spelling right.
So make sure you check it out. And very importantly, we have some Slangovar to give away. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, or you can check out imperfectlynatural.com, where I've got lots of other health and wellbeing stuff as well. And check the show notes, of course. You'll see that competition to win some Slangovar. And check it out. See if you like it yourself. And as promised then, Rosalind Palmer is, well, she'll tell you. She's queen of all things, rapid transformational hypnosis. That's the title. But hopefully this is going to be super helpful for you to just get a sense of how, well, anything is possible.
My guest is Rosalind Palmer, who is an emotional well-being expert practicing as an advanced rapid transformational hypnotherapist. We'll explain more about that. And she's become one of the most sought-after RTT practitioners worldwide. Rosalind's a best-selling author of the award-winning self-help book Reset, A Blueprint for a Better Life. Rosalind, it's so lovely to have you with us. And you know, I've worked with you in the past and seen bits and bobs of what you do. But it's really nice to be able to find out a bit more about you and about your work. And I know particularly you're going to tell us a little bit about how all of us can plan for a better future. And at the beginning of a new year, of course, people typically do their resolutions and set their goals and et cetera, et cetera. But actually, there can be an awful lot more to planning what we want than just grabbing a bit of paper and sort of hoping for the best, right? But anyway, before we get into any of that, tell us a little bit about your story, because you've had your own quite colourful journey with a bunch of stuff, right?
Oh yeah, that's why the book's called Reset.
Because, yeah.
There's just been so many times in my life when I just wished a big reset button would maybe just appear out of somewhere and I could just sort of hit it and then reset it all again. So yeah, I mean, I come from pretty humble beginnings. I was a grocer's daughter. I lived above the shop. I grew up in Nottingham. I was the swotty girl who got bullied at school, but it made me very bookish. So then I went off to the bright lights of London to do a degree in English literature, and I really wanted to be in radio. That was always what I wanted to do. I'd had my own radio show on Radio Nottingham when I was 15, and I got the LBC Radio Hospital Newcomer Award sometime.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, at the Royal Free Hospital in Hampstead. Oh. But then I got lured away from that into PR, which I didn't even know what it was. It was like really fledgling. But they paid more and it just seemed like you'd meet more interesting people. Little did I know. So anyway, I fell into PR in the 80s and I ended up working at Lynn Frank's, which is what Absolutely Fabulous is based on. So it couldn't have been a better place. I mean, I already had a background in theatre PR and publishing at that time. It was crazy. I mean, if you've ever watched AbFab, it's really, really played down.
I mean, I know Lynn quite well now, and I know that, you know, she talks about that period, and she says, you know, that she would start every single day in the workplace with chanting.
Yeah.
And back then that was, you know, that was a thing, right? I mean, I know a lot of people talk about that now, but back then that was quite unusual.
Well, particularly for a girl from Nottingham who went to a comprehensive school, you know. And I remember Lynn being in the toilets one day saying to me, "Why aren't you chanting? Why aren't you a Buddhist?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm Church of England," you know. So I was a bit the odd girl there, I think. A lot of the other girls at the time were kind of trust fund babies, you know, and they'd say hilarious things like, "Oh, isn't it lovely when we get paid because I've got pocket money for the weekend?" And I'd say things like, "Oh, I live on mine." And they'd go, "Oh, how novel." So it was insane, you know, the Rolling Stones in the office. And my second day there, I went on the Orient Express, and you just had to fly by the seat of your pants all the time. But I found it was something, you know, I could do. I was a good communicator. So I went from there into marketing and then advertising, all the big agencies in London. But then the 90s hit and everybody got made redundant. And I ended up being made redundant from my rather glamorous advertising job in 1991. And thought, you know what, I'll set my own PR company up. So I did, from my spare bedroom. My dog, my Basset Hound Rosie, was my first employee, and literally secondhand furniture in 1991. And in 2000, I sold the company when it had a £1.3 million turnover. So, you know, I was a super success story. I had an 8-bedroom house in West Hampstead, but I was broken. I was broken. I lived behind a mask. You know, my parents were really proud of me. Everybody thought it was great. You know, I was a member of Home House. I'd have personal trainer at 6 o'clock in the morning. But there were all sorts of really dark things going on. Like, I stayed slim because I was bulimic. I drank a hell of a lot. Actually, this is a good place to confess. But, you know, I came through agency life in the 80s and 90s. Mm, I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'd start the day, you know, sometimes, and then lunch, and then we had a 6 o'clock rule. You know, if you were still working at your desk at six, you could just go help yourself from the fridge, and then we'd probably go out afterwards. So when I think about it, you know, it was crazy. So I did lots of really great stuff, which I did learn from Lynn Frank's, thank God, Ayurvedic medicine, meditation. I had acupuncture, I had massage, I you name it, flotation tanks, wigwams, henges, you know, I was so new age on one level, but then on another level, I was very, you know, kind of hanging on by my fingernails. And so I thought I dodged a bullet when I sold the company. I moved to the Bahamas. I was a millionaireess at 40. Then my whole life imploded. That's when it all went horribly wrong. And basically in the space of 18 months, my father had a stroke on my birthday. Then he tried to kill himself. Then I discovered I had breast cancer. And then I had to have my treatment in America because there was nowhere good to have it there. I realized my husband was having a really bad protracted nervous breakdown. I'd got two kids, young kids, and they were adopted as well. So this was like the worst scenario for them. And I was just trying to hold it all together in a foreign country. And then we had a hurricane and we'd moved to an out island on a 10-acre organic farm and it destroyed everything. I don't know why I'm laughing. And then I discovered that my husband had gone through our life savings. Oh, wow. Then I discovered my mum had terminal pancreatic cancer. So I think we can say it wasn't a great 18 months. Mm. And I basically came back to England, having left in this blaze of glory with £1 million, etc., a single unemployed mother. Mm. And I had to go back to Nottingham because I couldn't afford to even be in London. And the kids were in free fall. Mm. I was still having cancer treatment. My mum died shortly after. My dad tried to kill himself again, just for good measure. And then I went through a horrible, nasty, protracted divorce. So in terms of alcohol, interestingly, while I was in the Bahamas, I didn't really drink at all. And when I had the cancer for 2 years and I lived on the land and the sea on this organic farm, I never drank. I didn't have anything that, you know, wasn't pure or we couldn't grow. But then when I was a single mom going through this horrible protracted divorce and my mum had died and I realized I had no money, you know, it just crept back in again badly. So I had to reinvent myself, and I did. I got together again. I married a second time, ended up working in a training and development company, then head of marketing for an international charity, the Leprosy Mission. So I spent time with the most marginalized, persecuted people in the world, which was phenomenally fulfilling. Mm. And even took Anne Widdecombe on two overseas visits. So, you know, I do deserve a medal. And then that marriage broke down and the menopause hit. And again, it was just like this. And I was like, oh, come on. I thought that I'd got it all back together again. And then my dad died on my 50th birthday. It was wow. Like, oh, thanks for that. So my life kind of went free-fally again. And then 5 years ago, Marissa Peer reached out to me, and it was just synchronicity because I could feel I was going on that downward slope again. And she said that she developed this new training for hypnotherapy, essentially, but it combined hypnotherapy, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, CBT, and psychotherapy. Now, I knew Marissa from the 90s because I'd done the PR for Tony Robbins and a whole bunch of gurus back in the day, Edward de Bono, Robert Holden, Brandon Bays, who does The Journey. They were all my clients, so I knew Marissa. I'd even been to her. And I thought, why not? Mm. And I just took to it like a duck to water, Janie. I didn't realize I'd have so many transferable skills. And I do like to say, I've been so fucked up. I'm like a brilliant therapist.
just before we go any further, because obviously I want to talk to you lots more about that, but just on that sort of journey of yours for a moment, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because we all have these perceptions of people who, you know, seemingly have it all. You know, the person that has it all, who lives in the flash house, who, you know, looks great, who has tons of money, who has the perfect job, who's, you know, ligging with celebrities. And there's that perception of that person. And you were that person, and other people would have had that perception of you. And yet it's really interesting, you know, that phrase you use, that you were wearing a mask. We use mask in a completely different sense now, but you know what I mean? You were putting on that mask. And yet behind it, did you know that you use that phrase, you were broken, but did you know you were at that point?
I had this amazing Ayurvedic doctor in London, and I probably trusted him more than anybody in the whole world, and I probably still do. And he just said to me one week, I'm not a betting man, But if I was, I don't know whether you're going to have the physical or the mental breakdown first.
Oh, wow.
And that was pretty much a wake-up call. That combined with the fact that my five-year-old son, who was adopted as well, I realised one Friday evening that I hadn't seen him awake since Monday. You know, Monday. I'd seen him on Monday. Then I'd got up at 6 every day. I was home at 10. We had a nanny.
So it's not exactly work-life balance.
I think those two things together, plus I had dengue fever, which really made me quite ill. I think those things together just made me go, you know, like the Jack Nicholson film, is this as good as it gets? And
I
so I really resolved to sell the company. That was really why we did sell the company, because I did think when I moved to the Bahamas that I dodged a bullet. I kind of thought I just pulled it off, but I didn't, because my life imploded, you know, about a year later. And so a lot of the damage, certainly the physical damage with the cancer and, you know, a lot of the other things, you know, that was already laid down. So I did think I'd pulled it off. I did think I'd got away with it, but I didn't. And also my ex-husband, that was too high a price for him as well, with hindsight. He didn't cope very well either. So no, you know, I did think I'd pulled it off, but 100% I didn't. But now I have so much better insight into, you know, and I didn't know. So I've heard you all talking and you talking, Janie, about not being any help at the beginning of, you know, your sober journey. And it was very much like me a lot of the time, you know, doing that as well, because you do the best you can with the resources you have at the time, don't you? But yeah. Now, in hindsight, I suppose the biggest thing is I have a lot of compassion for that woman. And then
absolutely.
When I lived somewhere like the Bahamas, my kids went to a school in a gated community. I didn't live there because I didn't want to live in La La Land. You know, it's the same one where Sean Connery used to live. And, oh, my God, those people who look perfect, really. I mean, don't even... I once said to my doctor, what's the biggest thing you deal with? And he said, alcoholism.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, and just there's a lot of very empty lives behind those gilded cages. I'm not saying everybody, but I've seen it at first hand. Like you say, I've been there. I've seen behind the mask.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you, you know, started to work with the rapid transformational therapy, RTT, as it's called, presumably for you, that was what helped you start to heal yourself and get to grips with what was, you know, going on for you. And then, you know, what do you think, I'm not even sure what the question is. I suppose it's always that, what's kind of like the one thing that really made the difference then to sort of really properly get you back on track?
I think the RTT very much, because I became a trainer, because obviously I was one of the first people trained in it. And so then as it grew and grew and grew, I became a trainer for about 10 courses. And interestingly, with alcohol, I remember sitting at the back of a room and Marissa was doing a live demo with somebody down the front for hypnosis to stop drinking. And I think I'd drunk most of the bottle of Chardonnay the night before. And I remember being at the back of the room thinking, I've got to walk my talk, you know. I can't set my stall out that I'm going to fix people or help people to fix themselves, is a much better way of putting it, when I'm really, you know, quite damaged myself. Now, I don't think therapists all have to be perfect, but I think they should have integrity.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting area. I mean, we should talk about this area another time, but, you know, one thing that I know you will have heard me say is that, you know, over my many years of knowing I needed to deal with this and yet not knowing how to, because I felt I was caught in this alcohol trap, you know, despite the fact that I was queen of natural health and you know, as you say, in the early days, you know, I was trying everything going. I had, you know, every kind of treatment going. And if I felt safe with the person, I would usually raise the issue of alcohol, and not once did anyone ever, well, they didn't, no one really gave me anything helpful, really, to be honest. Yeah. Every single therapist I ever saw, it's not their fault. You know, I really don't want to kind of be mean. But the truth of it is they didn't know about grey area drinking. The question would be, well, you know, how much are you drinking? Well, obviously you lie and you say a couple of glasses or whatever, and then it's, well, sounds normal then. So I mean, it's a conversation for another time, but
no, I hear you, and we're kind of edging on that. And you know, you asked me that question, and I think, you know, my own journey, because I'd been through so many things, because it had looked good, and sometimes it had been good, and sometimes it really hadn't been good. And then I am, you know, funnily enough, I was trained in hypnotherapy and NLP in the 90s when I worked with all these clients. I had this grounding in it. I suddenly was able to transfer those skills. But, you know, I have clients all the time who walk into my room. I mean, the first time I dealt with a teenage anorexic, and she was really self-harming, and she'd actually gone on YouTube on the Monday to announce that she was going to kill herself live on the Friday.
Wow.
And her father rang me up and went, oh, I hear you're one of the best RTT people. I'm driving my daughter up to see you from Brighton. I was like, no pressure. And I sat down with this girl who really didn't want to be there, right opposite me in the room, with her arms folded and like downy hair, because she was so anorexic. And she had this amazing tattoo, but we won't go there. But I remember saying to her, I remember just going, how do I open this conversation? And then I just said, the difference is, when I was bulimic, at least I used to get to eat the food before I puked it up. You know, and I was like, and she just looked at me and she went, you're not like a normal therapist, are you? And I was like, maybe not, but you know, that's me. And I bring me to the party, and it does seem to work very well with people, because I have oodles of compassion. Mm. I've walked a lot of those paths.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for anyone who is really completely new to all of this, you know, kind of conversation, just describe for us how hypnosis works, because there may still be people listening who are thinking, oh, hold on, isn't that, you know, where a stage hypnotist tells me to sit in a can of baked beans kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that weird stuff goes on. But people basically, they choose the very susceptible people, and people are up for a mad night out. So we can just completely park that. So really, I like to use the analogy that, you know, we're all houses and we're all built on foundation, and all of our foundation have got some cracks in them. And most of the time the house stays up okay. But then maybe a couple of hurricanes come along and quite a few events happen, and suddenly you've got a 3-foot hole in your wall and you're like, well, where did that come from? Or you're very aware that there's something not right, because things keep shifting, but you don't really know how to deal with it. And repeat behaviours, Groundhog Day type behaviours would be a perfect example, where you kind of try and willpower your way out of something, or you try and kind of coach your way out of something. And I am a coach as well, so I'm not being pejorative about coaching, but there's a fault line. There is a fault line somewhere within there. So the hypnotherapy, it just really relaxes you. Some people are really highly suggestible, and they, you know, they kind of come round after half an hour and go, no, hello. And other people go, oh, well, I just felt like I was sat there with my eyes closed. You know, it really doesn't matter. It really is how comfortable you feel with letting go. So that is not the deciding factor. But the factor is, the skill of the clinical hypnotherapist is to go into where those fault lines were laid down. You know, so I'm afraid of dogs. What happened in my past to make me afraid of dogs? Now, the difference between a traditional clinical hypnotherapist, and I am a clinical hypnotherapist and a rapid transformational therapist, well, that overlaying of the CBT, the NLP, the psychotherapy, we tend to delayer a bit like an onion, because our premise is, it's very, very, very rarely about one thing, one incident, unless it's something so traumatic. And I've dealt with quite a few people who grew up in Northern Ireland, and you know, the house was blown up or something terrible happened in the street in front of them. And it imprinted, it was such a traumatic experience that it was like a very strong fault line, if you like. But usually it's not. Usually it's like, auntie's dog bit me, then that dog growled at me, then dad told me that if I was a naughty girl, he'd lock me in the cupboard with, you know, something else. And the subconscious, which really is there to protect you, layers these things and kind of goes, danger, danger, this is a really bad thing. I'm going to do everything I can to keep you away from it. perhaps a good example would be drinking. So after my aha moment at the back of that room when I was a trainer, I actually went to another RTT therapist to do a stop drinking session on me. And when I regressed and went back, I discovered that in my early years, and I'm talking about like when I was 3 and 4 and 5, and I was a very sick child, I had a lot of childhood illnesses, that my grandmas would give me like a little nip of whiskey or make me an egg flip, raw egg, brandy or whiskey and some sugar or a bit of Wincarnis tonic wine. And I actually associated drinking with being healthy and being cared for. So that for me, years when I would maybe reach for a drink, I thought it's habit, it's because I want to block something out. You know, I got rid of all of that, but then there would still be this fault line, because the fault line really went back to that very, very early childhood conditioning and the association that my subconscious made with, in this case, alcohol, or it could be any form of a behavior. And, you know, and then when you're older and you don't want that behavior anymore, it's very hard if you don't really go back to the root cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've no idea how we get from all of that to how we set our goals, but I know you'll find a way, because you know, one of the things, as you say, that we, that you, you know, you are an emotional well-being expert, and I know that you bring in lots of different modalities, you know, to your work, and you know, one thing that we've been talking about, certainly, you know, within the Sober Club, is this, is the way that we can go after what it is we want, you know, our goals, our intentions. And yet, I suppose it does fully link, really, because it's all linked to our limiting beliefs, isn't it? How are we gonna set that stuff? How are we gonna determine that stuff? How are we gonna go after it if the little voice in our head is constantly saying, "Well, you're not good enough"? So tell us what you think then about this phrase goal setting. What is it?
So I really had a big turnaround about 3 or 4 years ago when I went to a course called Life Book, which really you create this great big book about every aspect of your life. But I have a diffused model, which is my 5Fs model, that I think anything in life, any balance, a great life, you need 5Fs. You need faith, fitness, friends, family, and finance. So I'll just park that for one moment. So when I work with clients, really, to kind of get to what are going to be meaningful, doable, and exciting goals, we look in those 5 areas. So, you know, faith is really, what do I have a faith in? It could be religion, but it could just be I have faith in nature. I have faith in there's something out there. Friends, it's really about your tribe. It's connection. Family, tribe, connection again, because it might not be your actual family. Fitness, body and mind, and finance, you know, what are your career, your aspirations, really. What I learned, the big game changer for me, because I have a background in marketing, and you know, I could do a SWOT analysis and SMART goals standing on my head blindfolded, you know, and often you'll see that just set SMART goals, you know, or you know, time associated, meaningful, whatever, and then by February it is Groundhog Day.
Yeah, and literally
and then you feel like a failure. And so every year you dread goal setting. It's a bit like people who dread standing on the scales. They become phobic about the bathroom scales because it just is literally, oh, hello, I failed again. Brilliant. What a brilliant reinforcement of what a failure I am. And so I realized I was very anti-goals in my personal life and what was happening. And why was that? And when I went on this course and then I overlaid it into my own coaching, I realized what I was really missing was the purpose. It really was the why, but also questioning some of my beliefs, which is what you're talking about. So when I do that exercise with my clients, I'm written it down to make sure I don't get this wrong. We go across all those 5 areas. So faith, you know, and I'll say to them, what's your premise? What do you believe? You know, so who knows? You might say, I believe in God, or I believe there is no God, or I believe in nature. I believe there's something out there, you know, that's absolutely fine. You know, what do you want? And that's the biggie in a way, because it's like, do you want that belief? Because a lot of our beliefs literally are inherited. You know, my family always said money doesn't grow on trees.
Mm. Yeah, we have these so many limiting beliefs around money, don't we? It's incredible.
I don't think money grows on trees. Why is that? Well, because I heard it every day and my family said that. But is it actually true? No. Is that belief working for you? So it's like, what do you want? What's your vision? The biggie then is the purpose. Why? Why do you want it? Why? Why do you want that? Mm. Now, and again, that I could spend an hour on that, because let's say that your big thing for why is because I want more money because I want freedom. Well, trust me, I've been around billionaires and a lot of them are really not very free and they're not very happy, you know. So I'm not saying, you know, don't go after money, but if you're actually after freedom, maybe think about how you can go after freedom now. What would give you freedom now? Oh, I could be free to have a walk. Even in lockdown, I could be free to have a really long bath. I heard one of the ladies say that when it got to that 5 o'clock stage, you know, cup of tea, bath, you know, brilliant. Love yeah. it. You know, I am free to choose to change my program. I am free to change my programming. And the why is one, I'll come back to that in a moment. But then after that, it's the strategy. What do you need to do to get it? Mm. So, you know, here's the thing. I want to lose half a stone. You know, well, what do I believe? I believe it's really hard to lose weight. Or I believe I can't do it if I can't go to Weight Watchers down the road in the church hall every week. Well, brilliant. Okay, how about having a better belief? Because that's not going to happen in lockdown. How about you need the connection, but you can still lose that half a stone, but you maybe need a different approach. You know, what do I want? Well, I want to look good, you know, my clothes. I don't want them to feel so tight. I want to look good when it comes to summer. Why do you want it? Why? You know, I want it because I want to feel sexy again. I want to feel attractive to my partner. I want to just, you know, not feel like I'm having to hide in a baggy jumper. I want to feel like I can do something, succeed at something. And then what do I need to do to get it? Well, clearly, if I can't go to Weight Watchers every week down the road, what I need to do is maybe join an online group, get a support group. I know I work better with support and people holding me accountable. And then the other biggie is, what do I need to stop doing? People always have on to-do lists what they have to do. The stop doing list for me was a revelation. Mm. It's like, what do I need to stop doing to do this? Well, arguably, if you want to lose half a stone, perhaps stop watching Netflix whilst eating 5 boxes of Pringles every night, you know. But, you know, whatever it is you need to stop doing, or I need to stop making those excuses for myself. So immediately you've got all of those things going on, and we do that across all those 5 categories. The why is so important, and you can really make a change. So I work with some really top level execs, you know, like people on 6-figure salaries. And I say to them, you need to put some rest into your day. You need some time out. And they're like, oh, and I go, right, I want you to put in your calendar, because their PA is seeing it, maybe it's shared, you know, preparing annual report or preparing next team away day. I don't care, but put it in there. And then I want you to say to yourself why it's so important. So for me, you know, get up and go for a run in my diary looks a bit rubbish on a February day when I wake up and it's raining and I don't feel like it. And I'm like, why am I doing this? But get beach ready, or get my mojo back, or, you know, get my sexy back. That looks good when I wake up. And when I look at that at 7 o'clock in the morning, half an hour to get my sexy back, I feel a lot better about that than half an hour to do a run.
So it's finding the motivation is what you're really saying.
Why.
Yeah, definitely.
You make the whole thing into your diary with the why. Mm. So that really is key across all of those areas.
Mm. Yeah, it really makes sense. I love the fact that you talk about, you know, that we kind of think of ourselves, or rather we ought to think of ourselves as this kind of, we've got this faulty software, you know, going on, and you know, and we can reprogram it, just perfect. Like we can, you know, I mean, there's so many analogies here, and I love them because they do really work. I mean, I know that when my computer's over, I'm really guilty of having loads of tabs open, you know, on my computer. And I heard somebody say once, it's just exactly the same, close the bloody tabs, you know, because you've got way too many open for the drive to be able to perform. And it's exactly the same with ourselves. You know, mostly I've also got too many tabs open in my brain of things I'm trying to do at once.
Well, there's something even more interesting with that, which is there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, and it's a filter. I'm sure people have probably told you this before. Because if we literally did take in everything and think about everything all the time, we literally
would be overwhelmed, yeah.
All the time, like a computer, just with 900 programs downloading at the same time. It's not possible. So the filter filters. The trouble is the filter can become really effective. And so the filter, you know, filters almost to the exclusion of other things that we want. You know, I call it the red car syndrome. You know, I'm going to buy a new car, I'm fed up with grey, I've never had a red car, hardly anybody has a red car, I buy a red car, I go for a drive, oh my God, every other car is red. You know, because I wasn't really filtering, looking at red cars before, I was almost filtering them out. And so you have to be very careful about what you filter, and also understand that you can change your filter. And it just means you've got to get used to it. The brain likes what's familiar. The brain does the same thing over and over again. It's what keeps us safe. It's what keeps us alive. It's a primitive form of survival. But because it likes what's familiar, it will kind of start going back to what's familiar, even though we're going, no, I want to make the unfamiliar familiar. I want to run every day, or I want to run every other day. I want to love kombucha, drinks, and, you know, feeling great and not having a hangover every morning. But the brain's going, oh, remember, you quite like that thing. So again, you've got to stick at the new habits. I mean, of course you have, and get every bit of help you can get. And obviously, if you can deal with it at the subconscious level, it helps even more, of course, because you're effectively going in and uninstalling the faulty software.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would your top tips be then for anyone sort of wanting to set these goals and actually, you know, learn the skill of goal setting?
Well, A, the purpose, the vision, you know, the one I went through before. So the what do I believe? What do I want? Why do I want it? What do I need to do to get it? And what do I need to stop doing? The brain also can't really tell the difference between what you visualize and what is real. And I know you're a big fan of vision boards and visualizations. And so again, visualize it, literally visualize it, create a vision board if that's what you like, stick post-it notes around your house with really positive little affirmations, act as if it's already happened.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think if you don't get the goal, or if, you know, a bit like if you fall off the wagon, and I know you say this to people all the time, that's fine. Reset.
Yeah, exactly.
Reset button.
Reset, yeah. You know, yeah, exactly. Reboot the computer, yeah.
Go through it. One of the other great things as well, because people will say to me, and this is even under hypnosis, they'll say things like, oh, I'm rubbish at sticking at something, or I never achieve anything. What they've forgotten is the good things. And again, we have a negativity bias in our brain.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a caveman. I need to look out for what's wrong. Oh, it's a saber-toothed tiger. I'm going to run away. I'm not actually thinking about the grass and the berries and the hills at that point. And there is a study on negativity by Harvard, and they reckon that for every positive thought we have five negative ones. And so you almost have to create that ratio again. So if you start beating yourself up, oh, I failed, I didn't do that, think back, almost do an audit on your past. You know, you can do a journaling exercise again. These are all things I know you have on your site. But an audit of what is it I have done well? What
exactly.
Did I do when I did it
challenging
well?
That negativity.
Yeah, when I did it well. So again, you know, using past good experiences to presuppose that you can create those good ones going forward. So I think they're my top tips.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really, really helpful. I mean, I'm completely with you. And I think this whole thing about the, this negativity bias, I think the language that we use is so important, isn't it? And we all find ourselves doing it. You know, this, oh, well, I never do that. Or, oh, I'm that kind of person. Someone said to me the other day, I'm always really anxious. I'm anxious about everything. I know that I'm, overly anxious about things that really aren't maybe that bad. I get really, really stressed. It's just the way I am. I've always been that way. Right. Now that's, talk about self-fulfilling prophecy. It really is. I'm not negating the fact that person does feel anxious, but just that language is sort of embedding it all. And how much more freeing to be able to just turn it around and look at that and say, well, have you ever not been anxious? You know, is there any time when you weren't anxious?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, sorry, say again.
It is available. That's
yes, one of exactly. My exactly.
Guess what? That is available to you. It'd be like sobriety. It is available to you. One of the beliefs people have is that things are not available to
them. Yeah, absolutely. That's so true.
They haven't had it. It's it's not. Everything is available to you.
Well, we could talk forever in a day, but just give us your website, Rosalind, where people can find out more about the work that you do and also get your books.
Great, thank you. And they can book a free 20-minute call as well. So www.rosalynpalmer.com.
Thank you, Rosalind. So just a reminder then, our masterclass on Thursday, 28th, 7:30 p.m. Hope you can join us. It's called Want to Have a Happy, Healthy, Sober 2021. And we're just going to be looking at, it's motivational, really. I just want to motivate you into making the behaviour change that you want to make. So totally non-judgmental. This is about you getting to think about what it is you want. And if that's sobriety, then we've got lots of tips and suggestions. But let's do it in a really healthy way. That's kind of always my intention. I mentioned our little Sober Club exclusive with Yakov Darling Khan, Shaman Yakov. And you can see a little tiny taster of that if you check out the Sky TV series that I'm doing at the moment. It's on Feel Good Factor TV, which is on Sky Channel 191. And both Saturday and Sunday, my show is called Being Imperfectly Natural. Starts Saturday, it's repeated Sunday. It's usually on about 9:15 in the morning. And it's real short. And I just talk about holistic living stuff. And this weekend, my guest is Yakov. So you get to catch a little bit of a sight of that. The following week, I'm interviewing Heather Dawn Godfrey, who's been a podcast guest in the past, about the benefits of essential oils for, well, just everything, really. So there's a couple of great shows coming up. Also on UK Health Radio this week, my show is with Bumi Abuaba, the food addiction coach. Some of you may have heard me interview her for the podcast. So if you want to grab some of that info again, that's on UK Health Radio. You know where I am if you want to find me. I'm very easily findable on social media. Please follow me on Instagram if you haven't already. Make sure you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events to sign up to register for that masterclass. It's completely free. It's this Thursday. And of course, check out the various competitions and all of that stuff that we've got. And of course, it was in the week, I think it was Thursday, wasn't it? Thursday 21st was National Hugging Day. Oh, the irony when so many people have no one to hug at all. My heart goes out to you. So I'm sending you a massive virtual hug, and at least give yourself a hug. And especially if you're doing this, this thing, if you're ditching the booze, if you're making changes in your life that feel tough, just hang on to the fact that, you're doing something amazing for yourself and you will never regret it. No one ever regrets ditching the booze, right? I will see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.